Welcome to the Quillette Podcast, hosted on alternate weeks by me, Jonathan Kay, and by Iona Italia. Quillette is where freethought lives. We are an independent grassroots platform for heterodox ideas and fearless commentary. You are about to hear a free preview of this week's episode. To hear the full episode and to get access to all our podcasts and articles, visit us at quillette.com and click the subscribe button.
I'm your host this week, Iona Italia. My guest today is the philosopher Holly Lawford-Smith. I talked to Holly about her new book, Feminism Beyond Left and Right, in which she explores questions of what it means to form political allegiances and how to counter those who want to police feminism. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Holly Lawford-Smith. So, you're talking about the beginnings of identity politics and the early, I guess this is second, I'm not sure which wave of feminism it is, maybe second wave feminism, and the idea of consciousness raising groups in the women's liberation movement. So I think this is in the 60s, 70s.
Yep.
And the idea was that, as you put it, if women think their situation is a personal problem, for example, a situation within their marriage or their partnership, their relationship with their boss or with their husband, the allocation of childcare in the family, etc. If they think their situation is a personal problem, then they will blame themselves for their failures. If they see their predicament as one that is imposed upon them as women, they will see that only collective political action can change their circumstances. So the point was and remains an important one. Some things that have been thought of as personal problems are in fact political. Calling them personal was a way for those with other interests to refuse to take the political problem seriously. Sometimes it's true then that the personal is political. But it is important to note that what this slogan means is that some things we thought were merely personal issues are in fact political issues. What I thought was a problem with my husband is really a problem with men, or the ways that men and women are permitted to relate to each other in our current social and cultural context. The slogan doesn't mean everything we thought was personal is in fact political, which would mean everything is political, that there is no personal political distinction at all. Of course there is. Your sister has no filter, and for this reason you don't like to attend family dinners. How did you know? this is completely, I just read that sentence. It's completely true. That is not a political problem. The collapse of the distinction between the personal and the political in at least some people's minds has entailed the collapse of the distinction between the moral and the political too. Where we might once have said, whether I attend the PETA demonstration against fur is political, but my own decision about what to eat for dinner is moral, we now tend to roll the two together and see individual consumption decisions as political. So this kind, how, let's start there, the collapse of a distinction between the political, the personal, and the political and the moral, which you also talk about, the collapse of those distinctions later.
Yeah.
How has this come about and what have the effects been for feminists specifically and for our political culture in general?
I mean, the how I'm actually less sure about. All I'm really sure about is that they have come about because they can be widely observed. And then the implications of that, and maybe partly what I'm arguing for in the book, it's like this would be a helpful thing to, a helpful set of distinctions to reinstate. So the problem that I can observe, I just think in our, now, I don't know, do you think that's, is that everyone or is that a particular generation at the moment? What I observe, but I am in the university context, is the politicization of everything. And this sort of excessive, I want to call it moralism, but that sounds like there is a moral political distinction. So it's like, it's it's like politicization and then making absolutely everything part of your political crusade. So all of these relevant distinctions that I think could actually help us a lot have sort of been lost. And it's interesting, like the bit that you just read, it's sort of picking a few different fights at once, right? Because one is the second wave feminists really liked this slogan, the personal is political. And I think in its time, it did a lot of really useful work. And that can be a hard thing, like you start to critique something because the pendulum maybe has swung too far. Now, that's sort of what I'm trying to say. I think it really did do its important work at its inception. Like, it was really important for women to realize that, like, it's not just their marriage or it's not just their sex life or it's not just their partner being violent. That is all really important. But now maybe we're in a moment where, like, it would be helpful to almost tell the opposite message. Like, mate, not everything is political. Like, not every single, like, thing that seems wrong to you in the whole world or about your life is a matter of your, like, intersectional oppression or whatever. Like, just dial it back a little bit. So I think that's what I'm trying to do in that. That's one of the things I'm trying to do in that part of the book is say, like, time for a little dialing back on this personalist political thought. And yeah, maybe by the end of the book, trying to say, like, let's get a clearer grip on some things really are just about me as an individual. Some things really are my moral for me, but that means they're sort of personal matters of conviction. They're not like a crusade for everyone. And some things are really still a case where we need collective action and we need to get those distinctions right.
Yeah, I mean, I have definitely noticed this collapse, and I think it's part of what's driving the purity spirals that you talk about in the book. I don't think you use that terminology exactly, but you talk about a kind of people's anxiety and condemnation of other people for working with, and we'll come back to what it means to work with someone, working with the quote-unquote wrong people. Part of that is a culture of catastrophization where there is one example of something bad having happened to you or out in the world, and that is immediately taken as symptomatic of a major political issue that needs to be tackled.
Mm.
And I think that is a very unhelpful way of looking at life, and also a very anti-resilient way of looking at life.
Oh, I agree. And also, this just came up in a class I was doing last week, actually. It's very hard to then intervene on, right? So say a police officer kills, a white police officer kills a black man, the catastrophizing reaction sets in and suddenly you have like terrible structural violence against African Americans. The thing that needs to happen there is for somebody to fact check that, right? But the people who try to fact check it, they just get absolutely like vilified as these like terrible bigots who don't care about races. It was more like, what sort of priorities do you have to have that's your impulse to fact check? I was actually talking to the students about this in the context of fact checking suicide claims about trans youth, because it's equally like really catastrophizing narratives, but there's something like yuck about the feeling of like checking that it's true, intervening on the catastrophizing. And so maybe that's just to say you get this additional social dynamic of like how to stop that catastrophizing from running away.
One thing that you also say is that there has been this kind of shift. At first there was a leftist struggle that many feminists were part of, or not at first. At one point in time, there was a leftist struggle that many women were part of.
Yeah.
And women's issues were part of that struggle, but they were somewhat deprioritized. And there was a move towards, therefore, a felt need for a separate movement that would focus on issues of relevance to women specifically and women's rights as a class. And there was a kind of brief moment in which that was the ascendant thinking.
Mm-hmm.
That was the kind of golden age of feminism.
Yep.
And then that idea that we needed separate campaigns for different for people with specific forms of oppression just metastasized into intersectionality, in which everybody needed a separate campaign because they were not just a woman, but a black non-binary, you know, a black non-binary immigrant woman whose father was Moroccan Berber and whose mother was a paraplegic.
Yes, but the logic is the same, right? So you can see how that the logic has a life of its own. Like you need a you need a separate movement that really speaks to your interests. You should not let yourself be subordinated to another group's interests. Okay, yeah. So that logic carries on. Well, if not if women, then why not black women, and why not lesbians, and why not women with disabilities? Okay, well, if women with disabilities, why not black women with disabilities? And that, so the like it's not incoherent. Like the same principles are being applied. The problem comes in at the political level, that you've just got this massively fragmented set of groups that are competing for resources and attention, and you're not being politically smart, I guess, about working together and what you could realistically achieve that would help a great number of people.
Yeah. It encourages competitive victimhood and infighting.
Yeah.
I remember, you remember during the Women's March after, this was, I think, 2016, after Trump's first election, there was a Women's March in Washington. And I was following it on social media, and I actually went on the march, which I feel slightly embarrassed about in retrospect.
Is this the Pink Hats March, or that's
the Pink Hats March.
But great turnout. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to it in, I went in Buenos Aires. I didn't wear a pussy hat, but I went in Buenos Aires on a kind of solidarity women's march there.
Yeah.
And I remember when the Women's March was first announced, it was said, this will be a march and it will be about women's issues, and the people who should be leading the march should be women. So it was very inclusive. And then the complaints quickly started rolling in. It said, you haven't mentioned black women, so black women don't feel welcome. Do you mean black women aren't welcome in this march? And then it was, you haven't mentioned disabled women. You haven't mentioned deaf women. You haven't mentioned Muslim women. You haven't mentioned, and it got just more and more ridiculous.
Right. You're like, but I said like, women, all of that is covered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of that in the Progress Pride flag as well. The rainbow flag already included everybody.
Yes.
So why do you need extras and extra stripes?
Thanks for listening to this preview of our latest podcast. To hear the full podcast episode and gain access to all our articles and podcasts, we invite you to become a Quillette subscriber. To find out more, visit Quillette.com. That's Quillette.com, and click on the subscribe button. That's Quillette.com, and then click subscribe. We look forward to having you as part of our community. If you're already a Quillette subscriber, go to the FAQ section of our website and click on how to add your private podcast feed to your favorite podcast app for instructions on how to access full episodes of this podcast.